former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome into what will certainly be an overreaction Monday edition the Lombardi Line, right? Recapping what was a hectic week six in the NFL, and it's not over yet. We got Cowboys Chargers still on tap tonight in prime time. That voice you heard, it is, of course, the three-time Super Bowl winning NFL executive, Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. And Michael, I'm just going to throw this out at you. I thought that the script writers were all on strike right now because you're telling me that the juggernaut San Francisco 49ers lose as a double-digit favorite to a backup quarterback, that Jalen Hurts is going to throw three picks in a game that Zach Wilson throws none, and that the Buffalo Bills need, like, everything possible to beat just a beleaguered, walking, wounded Giants team. Help me understand what happened yesterday. It was crazy.
And then can I throw that the Carolina Panthers had a 14-0 lead and still didn't cover? Want to throw that in there?
Unbelievable.
I mean, look, this was finally it happened, Stormy. The house has been losing for a while, right? We know that this has been the most profitable 5 weeks going into for the season. I think you have to go back to 09 was the date. Yesterday, the book settled all family business, if you will. The Jets had 10% of the money won. Raiders, 7% won. Houston, 11% won. Jacksonville, 13% won. Cleveland, 25% and won. And so it comes back to what the great Burt Bell once said, on any given Sunday, we will find it. But the 49er-Cleveland game was the one that you just shake your head on, because we thought that P.J. Walker would not play well. He throws two picks. He has one pass for 58 yards. His next longest pass of the day is 11. But what we didn't count on is that the Browns were going to be able to run the football effectively on a very good 49er defense, and that the 49ers, as we said, Kyle Shanahan's kryptonite is Jim Schwartz.
Yep.
And it proved out to be true.
Yeah, I think that it was mission accomplished when it comes for that Browns defense being for real. Have now held all five opponents this year under 300 yards, allowed just 215 to San Francisco, the fewest total yards the 49ers have had in a regular season game under Kyle Shanahan, period. And usually I feel like when we talk about the San Francisco 49ers, we talk about them as being the more physically dominant team. They got out-physicaled by the Cleveland Browns yesterday, which I think is important to note.
Yeah, they did. I mean, Cleveland turned it over. They made mistakes, but they found a way to be in the game, and the Niners had their opportunity. Look, the last drive of the game, Purdy was sensational. He was never going to cover for you, but he was going to maybe win the game, and unfortunately, they missed the kick at the end of the game. So I think it's one of those where you just say, okay, that's what it is. I said this on the GM Shuffle. I think the Miami 72 Dolphin, they don't have anything to worry about. I think it's really hard to go undefeated in the NFL with social media, with the constant attention, travel, all these things that go into it. I don't think that 14-0 record, the 16-0 or 17-0 that they've achieved winning the Super Bowl, is ever going to get challenged. I mean, you can rank that up with DiMaggio's hitting streak, Al Michaels' tie, the whole thing. It's just way too consistent. So it's a good thing. The bigger issue is Philadelphia, Lane Johnson. Right. They got, you know, they lose him and they kind of fell apart a little bit with their offensive line. They don't have a backup tackle that can go over there. They're 84-48-1 when Johnson starts. And when he doesn't play, they're 13-22. And yesterday, that line, especially the right side, got pushed back. And then Christian McCaffrey, is he going to be healthy? I think the Niners become a different team when McCaffrey's not in there. They can overcome Debo not playing. They can do that. But they can't overcome the way they operate right now. They can't overcome with McCaffrey because he's so much part of the fabric of the offense.
Well, and that's why when we were talking about MVP odds last week, right, and there was all the talk about Brock Purdy and the way that his odds had shrunk, I kept on going back to, well, McCaffrey, I know it's a quarterback award, but McCaffrey sitting there as an even longer long shot, he's the guy that I feel like this offense really needs. If you're talking most valuable, most important key cog, like, he's a lot of what makes that offense move. So unfortunate to see him go down, dealing with an oblique injury, Debo the shoulder. So the loss is costly in more ways than one for San Francisco. And you mentioned it coming down to that field goal. I am moody about the injuries, and I am more moody about this kicking situation, Michael, because I was sitting right here at Circa watching the way that the end of that game unfolded. And as soon as the 49ers were put in a situation where it was coming down win or lose this game based on a field goal and based on the leg of Jake Moody, I immediately knew that the game was over. Like, the game was lost.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't have the gene. He doesn't have the clutch gene. Jake Moody just doesn't. And so, hate to see that's the way that this game ends, but I keep on going back to it being still a good loss in my mind, because you're coming off of what was an emotional, dominant win against a Cowboys team that, even despite recent history, you still think of as a rival historically, on the road, bad weather, have two really rough calls that go against you, your key offensive weapons injured, your offensive line struggles, Trent Williams goes down as well, and you're still in a position at the end of the game to potentially win it. So,
yeah,
I think, like you mentioned, you know, it's hard to go undefeated. Probably wasn't going to happen anyways. That's a loss that I'll take as a 49ers fan. But now let's push that forward again to the Eagles loss as well, because the other undefeated goes down against the Jets. And as Robert Saleh said post game, they ain't 12-0 no more when it comes to the historical wins that the Eagles have had against the Jets. 20-14, your final, despite Philly leading 14-3 early in this game, Michael. Jalen Hurts turns the ball over three times, tied for the most interceptions in his career in a single game, and as a team, only able to rush for 33 yards.
If you would have told me at halftime that they were only going to score, they were not scoring another point the rest of the day, I'd have said you're crazy, right? You know, and this is a game where, kind of a funny game, right? Washington beats Atlanta, gives up 400 yards of offense, but wins the game by 8. This is a game the Jets don't really run the ball effectively. They really don't make very many plays in the passing game. They get sacked 5 times. But Wilson doesn't turn it over, and they're able to hang in there. I mean, the last interception by Hurts was really bad. They're playing zone coverage. He stares down the in cut, and, you know, and then the Jets score, right? They score so quickly that you're like, oh, my God, why did they do that? You know, and I know it gave them a lead, but you could have been tied. I mean, they left way too much time on the clock. Fortunately, that front, which, because of the right side of that Eagle offensive line, was able to cash in and make it a lot harder for Hurts. But one throw to A.J. Brown, and you could have been right. That game could have been tied. I mean, Brown was sensational. He had 131 yards. He made that unbelievable catch over there by the Jet bench. So, look, the Eagles needed it. They're not 100. Their health needs to get – they need to get better. We know their secondary is not good. They didn't have Slade. Yeah. They didn't have Jalen Carter. And they didn't create a turnover. And when you're -3 in the turnover takeaway, you're going to lose. Plus, we don't even count this, right? Elliott misses a 37-yard field goal. So they're -4 in the takeaway. And the Jets kicker made every field goal.
Jake Elliott missing that field goal, Michael, he prior to that had made 39 straight from 37 and in. He hadn't missed one at that distance in the last 3 years. So that was significant, obviously, for them to miss in that spot. For the Jets, though, especially like with the weapons that they were missing in the secondary yesterday, defensively, to play as well as they did, 3-3 right now with wins over Buffalo and Philly, nearly pulled it off against Kansas City. Like, that, I think, based on how tough their opening start of the schedule is, would have been impressive if they had Aaron Rodgers, but they don't have him. They are down Elijah Vera Tucker and some other offensive line injuries. And last night, like I said, with the secondary. So, I mean, how happy are you if you're the Jets and you're 3-3 right now, and then you have Aaron Rodgers throwing the ball on the field pregame without crutches and without a boot on?
Well, I think what you got to be really happy about is that, you know, week one, you forced 4 turnovers. Then you went silent and you didn't force any. And that's kind of was the trend last year. They could only force 2 turnovers in the last 9 games. And in the last 3 games, they have forced 9 turnovers. They have gotten after the passer, have created turnovers. This was the best run defense that they've played all year, which I don't know where it came from, but it was startling that they played this good of run defense. Again, the Eagles' offensive line was beat up. And this is, look, the Eagles defensively, they haven't forced a turnover in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, they got Miami coming to town, right? If they don't force Miami a turnover, it's going to be hard. Now, they'll score with Miami. Miami's defense is not very good, but it'll be a challenge. They're going to have to be disruptive within the pocket, and then they have to run the ball. I mean, every time the Eagles win, they got to run the ball. Against New England, they ran for 97 yards. That's a 5-point win. Had a chance to lose that game. They only had 17 first downs, right? This game, You know, they run the ball for 80 yards, and really the Eagles should have won the game. They just didn't make the play, turn the ball over. Credit the Jets.
Yeah, Eagles looking ahead to that game next week on Sunday Night Football, laying 2.5 points, hosting Miami, total 52.5. Interesting note as well, as we just kind of close out the conversation on that Eagles-Jets game. The Jets defense now, because they talk about the success that they've had here early in the season, despite all of their issues, has held Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes, and Josh Allen to a combined 3 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. So when they have played the better competition, they've stood tall.
Yep. Yeah, they have. And you know, look, as if they can avoid turning the ball over, if that's what they can do, they don't even need to be. That's what we said when Rodgers got hurt. But, you know, they go into Dallas and they have 4 turnovers. A lot of them were in the second half when the game was over. The Chiefs game, you know, the Chiefs, for all the conversation about how well they played the Chiefs ran the ball out with 7 minutes to go in the game, right? The Chiefs, the Jets never got the ball back when it was 23-20. They never could get the ball back. And then in the Denver game, that's a 21-24. See, I don't think we can overreact to the Jets win here. I think we got to hold our horses. And everybody said, well, you're a Jet hater. No, wait a minute. The Denver scores 24-21 when Russell goes and just fumbles the ball, right? This is 14-3, and the Eagles let you back in. Credit the Jets, yeah. I don't think you need to overreact to the Eagles' loss or the Jets' win.
Fair. The Jets, meanwhile, do have a bye this week, and when they return, they are playing in their home building, but it's technically at the Giants, so that at least they'll have an interesting opponent to face. Speaking of which, when we return, let's talk a little bit about what happened with the Giants on Sunday night. 2 critical plays don't go their way at the end of the first half and at the end of the game. We'll discuss that and a Lions team that is looking more and more for real by the day. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting started here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. You'll get a daily email recapping all of the best bets from our show hosts and guests. You'll also get unlimited access to the VSiN.com/picks page. Sort picks by sport, matchup, event date, and more. You can check the top VSiN experts leaderboard as well to view betting records, profit, and ROI to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand at any given time. For VSiN Pro picks, betting splits, power ratings, plus 24/7 video access, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Sign up now for just $19 for your first month at VSiN.com/subscribe. We're rolling along here on the Lombardi Line. Still to come in about 15 minutes or so, we'll welcome in Thomas Gable, director of the race and sportsbook at the Borgata. He is probably doing a lot of jumping for joy based on how the books made out like bandits yesterday in hour two. Somebody maybe not as happy, former man of CU Boulder, and he had a rough experience watching his alma mater this weekend. But Mike Pritchard, excited to welcome him in later on in the program. But to get back to what we saw in the NFL yesterday, we just talked about 2 contenders, former undefeateds, now knocked off of their pedestal a little bit in the 49ers and Philadelphia Eagles. The Buffalo Bills got a win last night on Sunday Night Football, Michael, but it was ugly. 14-9. Watching the postgame, you would have thought that they lost. Listening to Josh Allen speak, the Giants, who are a 15.5-point underdog, keep it close and probably could have won this game a number of times. What did you make of what we witnessed last night?
Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, the Bills have always been a team that, and I've said this on the program before, is their defense benefits from their offense. They're small on defense. They're not very physical in terms of being able to play the run. They give up 5.3 yards per carry going into that game last night. But they play from in front. And so when they play from in front, it hides some of their weaknesses. And without Milano and without Daquan Jones, and without playing from in front, it seemed like they got magnified in the game. And the Giants had every opportunity to win the game. At the end of the half, that's, you just can't allow that to happen, to not have points there at the end of the half. We saw that against Oregon, Washington, and we see it at the end of the weekend on Sunday night to happen the same thing. I mean, Oregon chose to not take the points. The Giants just messed it up. But I don't really want to hear that, well, you know, we were in a run, we had a run pass check. There is no run pass check there. Spike the ball and let's kick the field goal and go. That's what we're going to do.
Well, Michael, so Michael, can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Because with that situation, I feel like there I mean, given the time, and you heard Mike Tirico, I mean, I know you don't normally listen to the volume, but maybe you did last night. Mike Tirico is screaming at the field. That's awful. That's terrible clock management, because you could have gotten like 2-3 plays in there if you don't run the ball and have that situation. So just take me through kind of your mindset watching that unfold in front of you.
Well, I think what happens is that you typically, on the play before, when you get into that situation, right, on the play before the half, I think it was, I want to say it was the second, let me just get the play-by-play right in front of me here. So, you know, it's second and 10, and there's an incomplete pass, right? And I'm not sure, am I in the right? Yeah, second quarter, there's an incomplete pass, and then he gets the second and 10, and then there's the penalty, and then he goes, and he's got first and goal at the one with 14 seconds left to go, and you don't have a timeout. You can't run it there. You've got to say, forget the check. It's either we're going to throw a fade or we're going to spike or we're going to throw something. You don't have to spike it there because the clock was already stopped by the penalty. So, like, that was really poor, especially considering there was a penalty before it. So you got to get a chance to get organized. But if you go to the line with a check of, hey, we're going to run it if we have this look, but we're going to throw it if we have this look, is it really the quarterback's fault?
Mm.
Right? It really can't. There can't be a double. There can't be. Most teams go to the line of scrimmage with two calls. Nobody goes with a call. It's that, you know, we're either going to run this against this look, we're going to run that against this look, and if we get this look, there's all sorts of maneuvering going on. But in that situation, it has to be a pass.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I feel like everyone involved should have known that. Like, Tyrod Taylor in that position should have known that. And Brian Daboll on the sideline, like, again, why have the option in that situation to run the football when you know that's not what you should do? So, tough situation.
Right. And I think Brian has gotten so emotional, Stormy. You watch him on the sidelines.
We see him every weekend. Yeah.
He's out of control. He's like, he's running around like a madman. Like, that's not how you manage a game. And maybe if you stop trying to manage it and try to and focus on what's actually happening on the field, you know, okay, we got the ball first and goal at the one. All right, here's what I, you know, just tell the coordinator, all right, three passes, that's it. You know, we got 14 seconds left. It's first and 10. We have a chance at three passes in the end zone if we're lucky, three, but the ball's going to come out of our hand quick. We can't take a sack, and the ball's going to come out quick, and the defense knows it.
Yeah, we'll have Brian Daboll step into the office a little bit later. That's another treat that we have, as always, on a Monday when people that need to hear the tough talk, Michael will have that talking to with them. The Giants, by the way, three straight games now without an offensive touchdown for the first time since 1976. Four total games in which they have not had an offensive touchdown. And every single game in the first half have yet to have one. Giants are the fourth team, just the fourth team since 1950 to do so throughout the first six games. And we're talking about that red zone play, obviously another end of game situation where probably a penalty should have been called there on the untimed down for the Giants to have another opportunity. They don't. They end up going 0-5 in the red zone. And I loved your tweet, Michael. The Giants, Jets, Cardinals, Rams, Raiders, Saints, and Seahawks combined 5 of 31 in the red zone yesterday. Unbelievable.
You know what I love about the betting community? Because I complain too. Don't get me wrong. I'm a complainer myself. But I love all the Patriot people that are complaining that they got screwed because of the safety. Really? You think that's the reason that the Raiders covered the game? Because I look at the thing where the Raiders 1-for-6 in the red zone, Stormy.
Yeah.
Were they 1-for-6? I mean, I had to watch it. Yeah, they were 1-for-6. If they convert any of those down there, you're not covering that line. You don't even need the safety, right?
Yep.
You don't even need the safety. It's ridiculous. That game should have been a Raider 10-point win. The only reason it was close was because of the inability to score touchdowns. The same reason why when you and I left the air, I took Baltimore and recommended Baltimore and laying the points, and you're basically holding on because the Ravens were so bad in the red zone.
Yep,
this is what happens to games. I mean, this is why, you know, meanwhile, Miami gets down 14. No problem. We go 5-for-5 in the red area. We'll cover the 14 spread. No problem.
I was actually very proud of myself. Miami down 14-0. on the live line, -3. I bet that as soon as I possibly could. Oh, just fire.
What was it? They let you bet as much as you want, or do you have a limit?
Well, and listen, Michael, let's just say I'm not the one that's moving markets here, but I was excited to bet it there at the -3 because you just knew it was inevitable that this Miami team was going to get it together offensively. And they do. And
yes. And
to go back to the Ravens Titans game, the Ravens 1 of 6, as well as the what you were just saying in the red zone. Shout out Justin Tucker, got me 19 points for my fantasy team yesterday. 6 made field goals for him in that game as they win 24-16. But another one of those crazy games. Unders were 12-2 yesterday for bettors, Michael. It was just one of those days.
Because the red zone was so bad, Stormy. The play calls, the running the ball. I mean, look at Seattle, Cincinnati. I gave out Cincinnati yesterday. Lucky as can be. If you took Seattle, you got messed up by the red zone. It's the same thing that happened with New Orleans. New Orleans, Houston. You look at that box score and you say, hey, wait a minute. How did New Orleans lose this game? And then you realize that Derek Carr was a disaster in the red zone.
Another one of those unders was in the Lions Tampa Bay Buccaneers game. And after we were just talking about how, wait a second, Baker Mayfield, he's actually been playing decent quarterback, 20-6 ends up being the final there.
But we said it that Baker against a good team was going to come back to being Baker. How about, you know, he got 9 passes. The defense got their hands on 9 passes. He gets the ball tipped when he's backed up, and that leads to 3 points. You know what was impressive thing about that game was Detroit played well and won by 2 touchdowns, and they couldn't run the football. That to me tells you you're a good team. When the team that you're playing takes away your strength, which is the run game for Detroit, and forces you to play left-handed, which is drop back pass with Goff. I think he had like 44 attempts, and you still win by 2 touchdowns, you're a good team.
Yep, Goff 30-44, 353 yards, 2 touchdowns. David Montgomery had to leave the game with a rib injury. Of course, already down Jahmyr Gibbs, but they win and cover easily that 3 in Tampa. The offense is playing well, and the Lions defense, I think, could be one of the most improved units in the NFL, which is so important for them, and they're going to need to just to continue to get better. That 5-1 start for Detroit, Michael, their best start since 2011. And fun fact, this is the latest in a season since 1993 that they have had at least a share of the best record in the NFL. That's also the last time that they won a division title, when it was the NFC Central, 1993. Wow.
Yeah, look, they're for real. I mean, I said this on the pod today. They are for real. Like, let's stop talking about Goff on the road. They're playing well right now.
Be an interesting matchup next week, getting 3 in Baltimore, taking on the Ravens. The Bucs, meanwhile, 2.5-point favorite against the Falcons in a weird NFC South. But we'll continue going from the books' perspective when we come back here. Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata, get his lay of the land on how things played out, as well as Monday Night Football tonight and college football as well. Throw it all in.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Basketball season is ready to tip off, and the VSiN experts have been hard at work tracking the latest player moves to help you bet smarter. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today and get our all-new NBA betting guide. It's got up-to-date previews on all 30 teams, futures and year-long player props, best bets on player awards, live betting strategies, plus advice on how to build your own NBA betting model from our senior NBA analyst, Jonathan Von Tobel. Give yourself an edge this season. Get the VSiN NBA betting guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber. You can do so today at vsin.com/subscribe, and the NBA will have our attention at some point, but not today on this show, given everything that happened this weekend in the NFL and college football. So to help us break it down from behind the counter, we welcome in our guy TG, Thomas Gable, director of the Race and Sportsbook at the Borgata out there in Atlantic City. What a weekend. And I just imagine, Thomas, you sitting in your office absolutely jumping for joy with how well the books must have made out this weekend.
We did make out pretty well, and we can thank your 49ers for that, and we can also thank the Philadelphia Eagles for that. And so, yeah, it was not a great day for the public. It started out okay, I guess, for them with the Ravens covering there. Got into more of a sweat than I probably needed to be there in London early. Game closed 5.5, and Ravens do get that cover. So it started out okay for the public because they got bet up from 3.5 to 5.5 there. But then in the early slate, certainly the Niners going down there, no one expecting that whatsoever with after Watson was ruled out. It just not a good game for Brock Purdy, and the Browns defense showed that they are for real. And I guess I was more or less surprised that the Browns could even move the ball like they did on the ground against that Niners defense. That was the surprising part to me of that game. I mean, some of the other decisions early, Jaguars got the easy cover there on the Colts. That one didn't go our way. The Dolphins obviously able there to cover against Carolina. I think people were holding their breath there after the start to that game with the Panthers jumping out to an early lead, but no fretting there with the Dolphins being able to come back and cover that number. And then going into the late slate, it was the Eagles and Jets game here was obviously the most heavily bet game of the day with those two markets. And it seemed to be all Eagles money. We did have some respected Jets money come in, but just overwhelming support on the Eagles here from the public in every way that you could bet them. Now, they did get the cash first half Eagles spread, but it seemed like everybody who bet that immediately came back at halftime and rolled that into the Eagles on the second half. And that didn't work out too well for them. So I guess, Michael, my question for you there is, if you're Nick Sirianni there and the Jets are out of timeouts, the Eagles have the ball, you're at 3rd and 9, mm-hmm. Do you call that passing play there or do you run the ball and then just punt and make Zach Wilson go down the length of the field in, you know, about a minute 30 or a minute 20, whatever's going to be left there, and have him beat you that way?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in favor of that. I think winning the game there is always kind of like the analytical way to do it, because analytics doesn't really account for playing good defense. I mean, had analytics been around for Super Bowl 49, you know, we would have let Russell Wilson score and try to get the ball back with 24 seconds. So, you know, I mean, I think at some point you got to take to your defense. Look, Saleh did that, I think, later in the game when the Jets scored too quickly, the Eagles let them score.
Yeah.
But I think, in fairness to Saleh, I don't think this was planned. I think they just scored because it didn't look like there were any tactics to it. The fact that the Eagles right side of the line wasn't playing very good, that they actually felt like they could get pressure. But I agree. I mean, you got in that situation, you know, when you got a chance to put the game away, or basically there was what I think there was at that point in the game when he throws the interception, there's 2:06 it's just after the 2-minute warning.
Yep,
and so
yep.
He had no more timeouts. So if you run it there, they're going to get it back with $125. And maybe if you pin mm-hmm. them, you know, they're going to have to go a long field to beat you.
Yeah, exactly. And I will say this, I don't think the Eagles defense played terribly yesterday. The offense was atrocious, but I didn't think the Eagles defense played badly. But we know what the outcome was in that one. And then the late night game there with the Bills and the Giants, probably a different story here from most places. A lot of Giants money here, but those people did get to cash there. Surprising result, 14-9. Bills, again, really having trouble on offense. And Allen just not looking sharp here 2 weeks in a row, and certainly injuries have affected that team greatly moving forward. But Stormy, please do not worry. Your 49ers still the number one power rated team in the league, even though they suffer their first loss. They're still up there as number one in the power rating.
Hey, Michael and I were talking about it earlier. It's hard to go undefeated, right? These things mm-hmm. are inevitable to happen. And it just stinks that, you know, you have a weather game like that, a couple really bad calls too. And then you want to have an opportunity to win the game and your field goal kicker doesn't have the clutch gene. So just can't get there. Can't get there. And it's also a good reminder, too, that like I was very happy with my number. I got 4.5 with the 49ers going into this game. Mm-hmm. That it sometimes it just doesn't matter what number you get. Even if you get the best number out there, you're not always going to win in those spots. So 17-19, the final. Browns get it done. How about tonight? Monday Night Football. We got the Chargers and Cowboys going head to head. The Cowboys, obviously, most recently in primetime, getting dominated by that 49ers team. Chargers, meanwhile, off a bye. Shouldn't have any restrictions for Justin Herbert, despite the finger injury on his non-throwing hand. How are people betting it?
So the Cowboys opened 2-point favorites. You're seeing Chargers money come in here, though. It's down to 1.5. Majority of the money is on the Chargers. The total got bet up originally 47.5, up to as high as 51, got a little bit of buyback there. So we dropped it back to 50.5 now on the total. But important game here for both of these teams. The Cowboys now with a win, they're only one back in the division, and the Eagles really have a tough schedule upcoming. I mean, they have Miami coming in next Sunday night. Then I think they play the Commanders, but then they have games against the Chiefs, the Niners. The Cowboys obviously still have two against them. So I think with a win here tonight for the Cowboys, this NFC East is suddenly much more up for grabs than what it was looking like coming into this week. So very important game, I think, for both. And the Chargers, I mean, if they lose this here tonight, again, they have a tough slate ahead as well. So their season, you could almost put a bow on it if they lose here, because they have the Chiefs in Kansas City next Sunday. So a big game here for both of these teams tonight.
All right. So what did you open up the Miami-Philly game, and how fast did the Eagle fans run to the window to bet the Eagles?
Well, it'll surprise you, Michael, because we opened 2.5, pretty much in line with the market, and it's been steady Miami money. So we are down to 1.5 here.
Wow.
So it's been early Miami money here at Borgata. Not usual with the way Philly fans are, but yeah, it's been Miami money here.
Is it respected money, TG? Is it respected, or is it just kind of all?
No, it is. And again, I mean, most of the early money, you know, you do pay attention to the early money because those are guys who are betting to get the number that they want, much like Stormy got the number she wanted on the 49ers. Doesn't always work out, but it's all about getting the best of it. And, you know, taking 2.5 there with Miami probably was a good idea.
We've only got about 60 seconds left, TG, but it was also a really fun weekend of college football. What was the handle like this weekend? A couple of really big games, obviously, with Washington, Oregon, Notre Dame, USC. How'd things play out?
I'll say this. It was the biggest handle weekend of the season so far for college football here, by a long stretch as well. I mean, just with the Washington-Oregon game, Notre Dame-USC, taking big action, even games that you wouldn't think would be taking big action. The Kent State game had a monster handle on it on Saturday. It was really just a fun day to be a part of. And, you know, this weekend we have some big ones coming up, including Penn State, Ohio State.
Oh, that is one I am beyond excited for, which we'll have to preview that a little later on in the week. TG, you are awesome. Thanks for doing this, buddy.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, TG.
I like Penn State, Michael. Uh-oh. I do. Ooh, we got to step aside when we return. Notable injuries specifically to the quarterback position in the National Football League. How to analyze those injuries when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Don't forget, everybody, on DraftKings Sportsbook this season, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app And use the promo code VSIN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. He's Michael Lombardi. I'm Stormy Bonantoni as we continue to break down all things week six of the NFL. Still one more game to come tonight, Chargers and Cowboys, which we will preview more in depth a little bit later. But with all of the results we had yesterday, Michael, we also had a lot of QB1s that went down with various injuries. We had Jimmy Garoppolo, who initially after the hit, you thought that he was going to be okay, finish that drive, but had to get taken in an ambulance to a hospital dealing with a back injury. Justin Fields dislocated his thumb, had to leave the game early for the Bears. Trevor Lawrence believed to have avoided major injury, but Doug Peterson calling him day-to-day right now, dealing with a knee. And Ryan Tannehill had to be carted off the field in London with an ankle injury. So a lot of guys dealing with some stuff this week.
Yeah, Tannehill doesn't have a game, so, you know, we won't know that. Lawrence, he's got to play Thursday night.
Yep.
Now, they said he went to the press conference without a limp, but he did not look good to me. That injury didn't look good. I don't know if you could – where the Deshaun Watson is in this equation. Daniel Jones, where is he in the equation? I do think that the Bears game and the Raider game will have two quarterbacks not named Justin Fields or Jimmy Garoppolo. I've rarely heard of a player going to the hospital for a back injury. So there's obviously something going on there that we don't know. We'll find out more perhaps later today or tomorrow. But I would have a hard time thinking he's going to be able to play next week. And as we move forward, I mean, there's so many guys getting hit. I mean, I don't know. Stormy, I don't know how Sam Howell's avoided injury.
Yeah.
I mean, he got sacked five more times yesterday. Like, they just let him get hit.
Is that 34 now for the season for him?
He's got 34 after six games. He's almost getting six sacks, and they don't care. They just keep letting him get hit. They'll even run him. Like, it's unbelievable how he just takes a beating, and the kid just got to keep getting up. I mean, if I was his parents, I would be complaining.
Yeah, there's been a lot of bad offensive line play across the league, Michael. And I know that there's been
really
a lot
bad.
I know that we're at the point in the season, too, where like injuries are piling up and it's an inevitability. But like just offensive line in general, I feel like every day that we come on the program, we're complaining about something somewhere. For Jimmy Garoppolo, we saw Brian Hoyer come in relief, 6 of 10, 100 yards, didn't turn the football over, didn't mess things up, which I think was important for them in that spot. But he's not a quarterback that you're saying, oh, I want that to be my starter right now. So I think that's significant that we're going to see that we're seeing Jimmy G go down yet again.
Yeah, no question. And look, when he goes in, I know Brian signed him when I was a GM in Cleveland. He came in, he played well for us and got hurt. But what Brian is really the epitome of a 2020 quarterback, a little bit like Carr. You get him in that red zone, he tries, all of a sudden he thinks he's Tom Brady down there and he throws interceptions. And I think that kind of was weighing on the Raiders' mindset. He made a great throw on the post that really got him that field goal that they needed, and they were able to kind of extend that lead. So, look, people always ask, well, why didn't they just put Aiden O'Connell in? Well, what happens to you during the week when you have a starting and a rookie? I think we see this in Cleveland. The starter takes the reps. The rookie gets very few. You need a veteran so when you have the quick change, he can go operate the offense fully without reps and without practice. And that's kind of what Hoyer did. I think if they go next week and Garoppolo is ruled out, I think Aiden O'Connell will be the quarterback because he'll be able to get every single rep in practice. That's really important. But to finish a game, you kind of went with a veteran. And look, Hoyer made it. I mean, he threw over 100 yards. He made enough plays. They managed him. They didn't want him to mess the game up. Missed some wide open receivers at times. I thought the third down call towards the end of that game, especially considering that if they get that first down, they win it. But look, Crosby came through for him. Crosby got him in the trouble and got him out of the trouble.
21-17, the final there for the Raiders. What you said there about the veteran quarterback brought up another idea that I'm curious your thoughts on with Gardner Minshew, who had a really, really rough performance. It seems like in previous instances where Richardson went down and he's kind of thrust into the position to go out and finish a game. Gardner Minshew was able to have success, right? He's a veteran guy, knows what he's doing. The opposition hasn't game planned for you. You've also got a little bit of adrenaline being put in that situation. Full week to prepare and an opposing defense to prepare for you. Knowing Gardner Minshew's the guy, it was bad. And I caught some of your spot on Follow the Money this morning where you said it wasn't just bad, it was horrific. Take me through Gardner Minshew's performance against the Jags.
I mean, look, it was horrible. The field looks small. It shrinks. He played small, was under pressure, can't get the running game going. I mean, the mentality here was simply this. Look, we're not going to let them get the ball, get running. We're going to make them have to throw it, and Minshew won't, and he couldn't. And they're not skilled enough on the outside to bail Minshew out. This is going to be a long stretch for the Colts. They're not good enough. I know they beat Baltimore in Baltimore, and they were able to win with their defense. But the Jaguars, especially Peterson against Bradley, is a good matchup. I missed that one. I should have really made more of a point of that. Everybody was on the Colts. The Jags were getting very little money. I know Thomas said it. He lost the Jags in his shop. But for the most part, there were a lot of sharps because of the travel. Remember I was talking about the travel?
Mm-hmm.
That was a mute point. That became a mute point. I don't think it'll be a point for Baltimore-Detroit this week either. So, you know, to me, Indy just doesn't have enough juice to compensate. And where Richardson gives them those plays, those loose plays, they become more effective. That game could have been close. I think Steichen sometimes thinks he's still coaching the Eagles because he goes for it on fourth down, like in the red zone. All of a sudden, why go for it? No, take the 3 points. You're going to just give him the ball back. He goes and turns it over, and then they get an interception. If he gets the 3 points and they get a turnover, now he's back in the game.
Three interceptions and a fumble for Gardner Minshew. Felt like a comedy of errors at times. 37-20, your final. So Jacksonville easily covers the four. Total goes over the 44. And like we mentioned off the top, Trevor Lawrence dealing with an injury. But Doug Peterson calling him day-to-day. He played all but 3 snaps in the game. C.J. Beathard just kind of kneeled him out there at the end of the game. They are at New Orleans on Thursday night. Total 40, so something that we'll have to monitor. And also the Colts next taking on the Cleveland Browns, who, yes, get a big win over the San Francisco 49ers in bad weather with PJ Walker as their starter, but still a lot of questions about Deshaun Watson and whether or not he's going to come back, dealing with a deep bruise in his rotator cuff, Michael. And the report from Mary Kay Cabot, who covers the Browns closely and has for years, is that the team doesn't want to play him until he's pain-free. But who in week 6 of an NFL season is pain-free right now, period? Yeah, so what does that mean?
I never heard of that. I mean, there's no player pain-free. Even the kickers aren't pain-free. I mean, nobody's pain-free this time of the year. You and I aren't pain-free this time of the year.
You're telling me. Over 30 years old, I got a knee injury. It's crazy.
I don't know what that means. I know this. Minshew will have a hard time making throws against the Browns secondary because the Browns will play man-to-man against these receivers of the Colts and take them out of the game. And then we know this about Schwartz. It's hard to run the ball. So Minshew's going to have to be pitch perfect for the game. I'm shocked it's only 2. I don't care who plays quarterback for them. One thing the Browns proved to me on Sunday against a very good 49er defense, they can run the ball. They can run the ball. And I thought Kareem Hunt looked good yesterday. I thought he was back to running with power and purpose. And then Ford's still a good player. He's the third best back in yards after contact in the National Football League. Look, if Walker just doesn't turn it over, which he did twice last week, this is a good enough team to go into Indianapolis and win. I mean, it's going to take everything out of Minshew to get the ball down the field. He was horrible on third down. And plus, let's face it, this Colt offensive line wasn't good enough yesterday either.
Well, and I just think if that's how your offense looked against Jacksonville's defense, what an uphill battle that's going to be against Cleveland's. Yeah. With Deshaun Watson and with Daniel Jones, I know it's still early in the week, but if you had to say right now, if you thought one of them was going to be in or out of the lineup come Sunday, what would you say?
I would say Daniel Jones will be in. There was a lot of conversation he was going to play. I think he'll be in. And I'm surprised. I can't believe Washington's a favorite against anybody, really, seriously. They gave up another 400 yards. This line's got me. I mean, I know the Giants are no good, but they played the Bills as good as you can play them on offense with their defense, right? They played well, and they beat Washington twice last year. So I'm shocked by this line. I can't believe. Remember, what did we say on the show yesterday? Take Rivera when he's a dog. Never touch him when he's a favorite.
Michael, it was so funny because the Commanders game wasn't one that I was really watching particularly closely yesterday. I saw they only gave up 16 points and was like, oh, wow, Ron Rivera's defense finally stood up. They were finally awesome. Like we expected them to be a top 10 unit. And you see, oh, yeah. Well, they had three turnovers, but they still gave up 400 yards. So it still was like a bad defensive performance. They just got lucky in a lot of instances.
And they got three turnovers and they got a great punt return. So the punt return got them seven. So they got up 17-7 because of that. Everybody's giving Ritter a hard time. Look, Ritter made some mistakes throwing the football. There's no question, but he made some really good throws in the game.
That one pick though was just an absolute gift to Washington. We're going to step aside, resetting for hour two when we return. Michael's biggest takeaways from week 6.